He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is Boston Public Radio.
89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1 Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan here with us in Studio 3 for All Revved Up to take on the moral dilemmas of the day. Our Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. Reverend Irene Monroe is a syndicated columnist. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Good to see you both.
Thanks for having us back.
Great to be back.
Well, let's start with a little local politics, you guys. We just had an election, obviously, all across the country in Massachusetts. Charlie Baker eked out a close race, beat Martha Coakley. He's, of course, a Republican. He spent a lot of time in the black community getting more votes than traditional Republican – that has been traditionally true for Republicans. Just yesterday, he was at a black church. I don't know where it was. It was someplace in Boston. Anyway, does this matter? Does it matter that he's showing up in a way that, you know, Scott Brown was criticized, Mitt Romney was criticized? I don't even know what we thought about Bill Weld.
Wait, more than he did when he ran 4 years ago. Yeah. Forget other Republicans. Yeah. More than Charlie Baker did when he
absolutely more than he did 4 years ago. Yeah. So does this matter? We're going to see some changes here.
I think it does matter. I mean, you know, the population, the demographic in Boston, I mean, you have to claim that black vote if you were going to win. And I think Charlie Baker just did a little bit more than Martha Coakley. Let me say that Martha Coakley was out. She was in the community. She was working. She did much better than she did
the last time.
Yeah. But Charlie Baker did. He shook the right hands. He was in the right pulpits. He was at the right events. And he squeezed it out.
Well, by the way, Grace smart. Church of All Nations was
Grace
the name
Church
of the church
of all
he went
nations.
To. I'm sorry.
Irene, go ahead. I should have known that.
Well, I think he's smarter on so many levels. For one is that, interestingly enough, speaking about Ferguson, a lot of Ferguson's population voted Republican, blacks. Voted Republican because the Democratic Party there is not addressing the needs of its population. And so, interestingly enough, the Democratic Party has for too long taken advantage of the black vote.
Singing Marjorie's tune.
Taking it for granted.
So I think that, you know, Baker is very smart because in some ways he's doing what a lot of the Republicans have tried to do, which is woo black voters, try sort of marketing it by saying it is the party of Lincoln. We can do more for you than certainly what the Democratic Party has done, you know, since you became Democratic. So I think he's just really, really smart because they need black votes. And the truth be told, the Democrats have exploited us.
Well, you know, I heard a fascinating analysis on Basic Black, which follows Emily Rooney's show every Friday night at 7:30. It's a really good show. And someone, I forget who said it, made the point that the reason, and this is a cynical point, but I thought it was a very clever point, that the reason Charlie Baker was courting the black vote and being seen so much in the black community was not so he'd get more black votes, but so white liberals would feel
Excuse me. That was not on Basic Black. That was me last week on the show.
Well,
close enough.
But you're basically black with that afro. So there you have it.
You're blacker than the people
well,
on
maybe
Basic
they
Black.
Said it there, too.
But I thought that, okay, I must have missed it when you said it brilliantly, Jim. I heard it on Basic Black. But I thought it was an interesting, if cynical, perspective. Now, what do you make of that, Emmett?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting. I don't know if I can abide by that logic there. I do think that Charlie Baker got to the right people. You know,
that's right.
You know, I don't think that his ploy was to play one group or one cluster against another group or another cluster. The point is that there are many people still in Boston, in Massachusetts, around the country who don't vote, right? And this is a big issue. And so it changes the dynamic and the strategy of the race, right?
And it's also trying to say, listen, the Republican Party is not a monolithic. That while we see it as the Tea Party, and particularly a Tea Party that has just unabashedly as well as unapologetically gone after Barack Obama, we have people like himself and Rand Paul who spoke out about Ferguson and also what we need to do about the industrial prison complex. So
he's an interesting candidate.
It's trying to do what the Pope is doing, okay, is to have a much more friendlier and pastoral face.
So it's like we're going to create the Baker Watch. You know, by the way, getting back to what you said a minute ago, Emin, you know, I don't know, you used the word ploy. My attitude is, if this was nothing more than strategic, if the guy delivers the goods,
right.
Amen. I mean, seriously, the reality is, I think what he decided was, I actually would like to win.
Yeah.
And one way to win is to go places that Republicans, including me, Charlie Baker, have historically not gone. Mm-hmm. And now I think that he's raised expectations in communities of color. Mm-hmm. They're going to make demands. He is a guy who listens to us. Now that you've listened to us, candidate Baker and Governor-elect Baker, Governor Baker, we want you to deliver the goods. I think it is nothing but healthy.
I so agree with you. And the interesting thing about it, truth be told, you would have many more black Republicans if they were more sort of moderate to progressive on social issues.
And that
would even include your LGBTQ population.
I think on the local side, that's true. When you go nationally, I'm not so sure that's true, though.
Say more about that. What do you
because
mean?
Because on the national landscape, you have more. So in Massachusetts, which is a, you know, quote-unquote Democratic commonwealth or whatnot, we do need a change. We do need more people at the table to have more voices so that we can actually have a debate and not just talk at one another about how you're going to do it better and faster and quicker, right? On the national landscape, when you think about the national Republican platform versus the local Republican platform, I'm not sure that Charlie Baker is a national Republican in the
sense. I know,
sense.
But you know what? Now this is where I'm being hopeful. I'm taking something out of your page.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, yes, it is a wild
moment.
She's going to
outdo me.
I'm dying to hear this. What is it?
Well, this is what I think here. I think, number one, you're absolutely right about Charlie Baker. But I think what happens is that when you get more people of color, people who have been on the outside, and you do have some staunch black Republicans, mm-hmm. I think it begins to push at the boundaries in the way in which the boundaries have just been pretty, you know, recalcitrant, you know. And so I think that it's a good – you're absolutely right. He's not the face. But I know that there are a lot of blacks in New Jersey who are Democrats mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like Chris Christie,
sure,
you know, or
sure.
Giuliani, or, you sure. know, the type of Republicans, the moderate Republicans you find in Chicago. So I just think that it opens the door in an easy, see, pastoral way, friendly
yeah.
faith,
yeah.
an easier way to really hit these issues that so long black Republicans have wanted addressed.
You know, last thing on this, by the way, one of the people who sort of broke the logjam, who embraced Baker early on, was our guest a couple of months ago, Robert Lewis Jr., who used to be at the Boston
yeah.
Foundation.
He is a dynamo.
Now runs the base where he uses baseball to mentor kids. He was one of the people who sort of broke mm-hmm. the logjam in terms of all African Americans for Democrats, and then
he's very energetic.
Yeah. I noticed
that.
And again,
he's a really good organizer.
Charlie Baker shook the right hands.
He did.
Yeah. Showed up at the right places and did the right events.
You know, and I want someone courting my vote. I just, you know what I mean. I really wanted to be like, okay, the
That's
issues
great.
Are difficult.
That's great.
So you know what? Just because I'm a registered Democrat doesn't mean that I will necessarily vote for you.
So you're going to stay hopeful into the next part of this discussion?
No.
That's
yes.
great.
No. Yes, fabulous. Please.
Irene has brought us a Pope Watch scale. We're going to get to the Pope Watch scale in just a second. Before we do the overall Pope Watch scale, for some people that are more pastoral and more welcoming, as you talk, we're talking about this this American Cardinal Raymond Burke. He was the big guy that said you can't talk enough about, you know, abortion and gay rights. He's been very to the right. He was criticizing the Pope last month for saying that he was being too pastoral. He was also upset that the Pope was even, and the Synod was even bringing up the whole thing of marriage and divorce, remarried and divorced Catholics getting communion and stuff. So anyway, he finally did what he'd been rumored to be doing for a long time. That is, the Pope demoted this guy. He used to be in charge of, one of the people in charge of hiring bishops all around the world. Now he's got some ceremonial post at the patron of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, whatever that is. In any case, Raymond Burke got the axe. Now, that's a pretty significant move, I would say, Irene, on the Pope Watch scale.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. You know, where he fell down to a 2.0, guess what?
What?
He got that 2.25 back.
Really? Okay. You think it's a big deal?
Absolutely.
Great.
Well, absolutely. But what I brought to you folks today, because I didn't want you to think that I was being arbitrary or argumentative, but instead being like Jim, all-knowing,
exactly.
I thought that I would bring a scale here. So a 1.
Go ahead.
I want people to know what a 1. Do you want to read it? You read what
no,
you want.
No, I want you to read. You created
well,
it. It's
a 1
beautiful.
Is that the Pope maintains the status quo. What does that mean? It means that don't let worry kill you. Let the church help.
Okay, that's
okay?
A 1. Okay.
Number 2, the Pope employs a limited degree of divine intervention. That means that there are some questions and concerns that can't be answered by Google. The other number 3, Pope the Pope's divine intervention begins when he recognized women. So what does that mean? It says you ain't what you ought to be, but thank God you ain't what you used to be. Number four, Pope's divine intervention includes women. That means half of the world population is praying for the things that the other half take for granted. And number five, the Pope's divine intervention is just right, meaning that Walmart is not the only saving place on the earth.
That is very clever,
Irene.
So it's
a two and a quarter.
Two and a quarter.
The Burke thing's a big deal. And by the way, the part that Marjorie didn't mention, all of that was correct. One of the things he also does, he's campaigned for denial of communion to Catholic politicians who support legalized abortion. By the way, one of the unanswered questions from the Menino funeral, because remember, the cameras were shut off at the request of the Menino family.
Well, they weren't shut off. It was really weird. During communion, they were up at the stained glass windows.
That's right,
So all you could see was the stained glass windows.
Well, politicians who support legalized abortion were denied communion. Do you know if they were?
I am wildly speculating that what happened is there were a lot of famously pro-choice politicians that are
That's
Catholic.
Right.
John Kerry, Marty Walsh.
Almost all of them.
Ed Markey, all these people that were there. And Sean O'Malley, the Archbishop of Boston, was also there. So I suspect this was to avoid a sticky situation for all concerned that they didn't show who was going to communion, because had those people, those pro-choice politicians, gone to communion, O'Malley would have been having to explain himself.
Exactly.
But he should explain. Communion is for all. And
well,
at a time like this,
you
want to be in communion and memorializing and paying tribute to a great man.
I'd give you a 2.5 for saying that, Irene.
So, 2.5.
Yeah, no, that was very good. So wait a second. Where are you on this this Burke thing? And almost every week we have another major moment, at least arguable major moment from the Pope. What do you think of it? It's a pretty big deal.
This was a huge deal because, again, it's the notion of the Pope standing by what he said he's going to do, and he's cleaning house. Takes time, right? And so in order, and I love Irene's list, because we have Emily's list and Irene's list. I mean, this is great. But the fact is that you can't sweep through everything and fix everything in 3 days. So he's going through systematically and looking at
how long must we wait?
See,
it's very easy. Now, I would expect you as a man of color to know what it means to be on the margin. How long must we wait?
Wait a second. The Synod ended a week or two ago, and he already has dumped one of the guys who was a problem. I would say that's a pretty good start.
Absolutely.
When's the final decision of the Synod? Next September, October, or something like that?
Well, the Synod doesn't make the final decision.
Well, he does.
Francis
does.
But,
I mean, when
did
they do their final
report? It's another year. It's in 2015. I think it's
15,
a year from now.
Yeah.
2015.
So I have a quote by the Pope. I have a quote, and it says this. I am wary of a solution that can be reduced to a kind of female machismo because a woman has a different makeup than a man. But what I hear about the role of women is often inspired by an ideology of machismo. Okay, so listen. Now,
you're talking about the little nuns?
Not only. Well, speaking
those
about
macho
that.
Macho nuns?
Okay, but speaking about that, now, interestingly enough, there has been a decline in the number of women going into that profession, as well as the number of women who left that profession. So the point about it is that he's only a 2.25 until he can at least get to a 3, meaning that he's beginning to recognize the inequity within the church.
But isn't he getting rid of the people who are against the things that he's concerned
about? Exactly, that's what he's
doing.
You know
what he's also doing? And I'll give credit to my colleague at cruxnow.com, the Boston Globe website that has to do with all things Catholic. John Allen's been writing pieces about what he's been doing with the corruption-filled Vatican Bank, and that's very scary. You might get the wrath of the mafia down on top of you, and he's been cleaning that up and getting high notes for doing
that. Well, you know
what?
I think that I could sort of sit in my seat with a little more comfort that if he had canonized Mother Teresa, that he skipped over her and he canonized John Paul II.
Yeah.
So I just think that even if he wasn't moving anything in terms of policy within the church, that even just for a token moment, no one has anything bad to say about Mother Teresa. He could have done that.
He could have done that. That's true.
Okay. Oh, Margie, you and I are on this. Oh,
we're
we got a sisterhood going
we're on
here.
We're on the same
here.
Page now. Okay. I think Mother Teresa should have slipped in before John
Paul II. Speaking of the same
page,
a few minutes ago, Irene, you mentioned Ferguson. And let me start with you, Emmett. I understand this totally. But when I read, I just went online right before you walked in the studio to see what the latest headlines are. Mm-hmm. CBS there, a citizen of Ferguson. We're getting ready for war.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, people know the reason for this is the grand jury is about to make a decision. The fear of the majority of African Americans is they're not going to indict the cop who did the shooting here. And when you hear, I have to say, I totally understand the anger, but when you hear small business owners who said, give us 48 hours notice so we can board up our stores, so our businesses are not destroyed, so our family's livelihood is not destroyed, you say something is really wrong with this picture, even if the grand jury doesn't get it right, according to the African-American community in Ferguson.
Well, there's no win here, right? Because if the grand jury indicts, then you have a population of people who feel like now things can move forward, but then you have another population of people who are really upset over the fact, right? So the people who are supporters of the officer, if the grand jury decides not to indict, then you have this population of community individuals who feel like yet again the law enforcement and the jurisprudence did not come out in their favor, right? I remember being in Los Angeles the day that the whole Rodney King situation spiraled.
How old were
and
you?
I was in high school. I remember driving down the street the very day I was leaving school, driving down the street from Hollywood to where I lived in the inner city of Los Angeles. And as I drove through the black community, I witnessed people pulling folks out of the cars.
Did you really?
And throwing rocks through through stores. And the issue was that these stores were owned by African-Americans, right? And the fact is that the rage was so, so pent up that folks were not even making logical decisions in terms of what they were looting. They were not making logical decisions that they were pulling people out of their cars who were parents of
But that's
young
20
people.
Years later. My understanding, and, you know, listening to the news this morning, is that a lot of the African-American leaders, as well as white folks, are going to be out there asking for calm. I think it will be a better statement that if they don't indict this police officer, just how biased and how unjust our justice system is. I think a better statement will be made. So I think that there will be folks on the ground to sort of tamp down the
or
rage.
At least trying to.
Right.
Well, it seems to me a critical player in this, not that he'll be able to deal, because it seems to me that if there's not an indictment and there's wild looting and destruction of property and damage to individuals' health, that doesn't help the cause, so
Absolutely.
To speak. A critical player here is somebody I've been pretty critical of, other than on civil rights issues, Eric Holder. It seems to me if there is not, who's still the Attorney General, obviously, if it turns out that there's not an indictment, he has got to go up on TV a nanosecond later and say the Justice Department is already looking at whether or not there's civil rights violations.
Absolutely.
We're going to
try imminently
to let you know what the deal is. We can't promise you an outcome. But if there's not another legal venue for people who feel that they and Brown and his family and the community were wrong, then all hell's going to break loose. And in my opinion, all they do is hurt their cause when there's indiscriminate looting and physical
and the very neighborhoods
injuries.
That they live in, because it's where they shop. See, the point is we still live in segregated America. So it's not like they're going to go leave their neighborhood and go to a Walmart over on the other side of town. Yeah. So absolutely.
And you're right.
I don't think this. I don't believe. Now, see, I feel like I'm taking a page out of Emmett's. I am optimistic.
We've been working on you for months.
Optimistic about what the reaction's going to be?
I guess I've been in rehab, huh? Okay.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, but I really think, I'm really thinking because the world is watching. The world is watching. You don't want to be noted to be on the wrong side of justice when you've already been given a notice. So I really think that they will err, even if it's against their emotional feelings about it, on the right side of justice. I really believe that. See, I'm keeping hope
Demanding
alive.
What, though? I mean, but it seems to me if you err on the right, as you say, you stay relatively calm but angry, then you need an outlet. You can't say it's over. And the
That's
only
right.
outlet, it seems to me, is demanding that the Attorney General of the United States immediately come to some closure on the whole. And then if it turns out he rules, there's not a civil rights violation, that's another issue. But at least let them know there's some legal avenue for justice for people who feel that justice may not have been done. And by the way, we should be clear. We have no idea what the grand jury is going to do, obviously.
No. Exactly.
They said about 2 o'clock there'll be a press conference.
Today?
Yeah, they said they will announce it about around 2 o'clock.
Okay. I'm
sorry. I mean, the biggest issue is that it robs the people of actually having their day in court, right? This whole grand jury piece.
The secrecy.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine what this poor kid's family is going through, having no idea what's going on there. And that's really troubling, is that we don't know what – I mean, I guess we have some idea of who the witnesses were, but we don't know what they said or what the reaction was. Grand jury, I mean,
and
they're secret.
And his mother is being brought up on felony charges.
Felony charges, yeah.
For what?
You know, it's
well, the whole idea of these shirts that are supporting Michael Brown, there's just a group of people who are just sort of appropriating the ownership of it. And so they are saying that she doesn't have a right to attack these folks who want to sell, you know, support Michael Brown.
With his image and likeness on the
right.
show.
You know,
and
one last thing about this
it.
Before we go is I think this is the point you were touching on or Irene was talking on a minute ago. If this is a slam dunk that the officer in this case did nothing wrong, then obviously the grand jury shouldn't indict.
Right.
If this is even remotely a close question,
yeah,
as
indict,
it clearly
indict.
Is,
yeah.
you indict and you
well,
let a jury
you
in the light of day
the line
hear the testimony.
That they can indict a ham sandwich.
Exactly,
I mean, that's the issue. If they want to indict this cop, they can find a way to
well,
indict this
cop. Well,
it's
like the D.J. Henry situation.
Same.
You discussed ad nauseum with his father, Dan, and his mother, Angela. There clearly was enough evidence to indict,
absolutely.
Even if you don't think the cop in that situation was guilty.
And then
indict
let them be
and
an
let
open
the trial
so everybody
right.
can see
that's
what
right.
goes
yeah.
on.
But if they don't indict, it makes a statement that the composition of the jury didn't matter because three of them are African-American, two black women and one black male. So,
well, it also depends on what the prosecutor puts in front of you.
Exactly.
Even if it turns out you have the best intention to be fair, mm-hmm. if what you get in front of you, I have no idea what they're
right.
getting, is all one-sided,
right.
then the reality is a responsible citizen and member of a grand jury doesn't indict. So we will see. Marjorie is sneezing, so she can't
I've
say
recovered.
Goodbye to you.
I have recovered, Jim.
God bless you, Marjorie.
Thank you very much.
Perfectly fitting
and
right here.
I leave on an up note because where the Pope fell at a two, he's at a 2.25.
2.25.
That's beautiful.
Keep
that is so
alive.
Beautiful, Irene.
The Reverend, I remember, I was a syndicated religion columnist. You can find her at the Huffington Post and Bay Windows.
I'm holding on to this scale
Pope
here.
Watch. I'm hoping to see that soon on the Huffington Post. I think they would run that right away. The Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. His latest book is The Black Church and Hip-Hop Culture Toward Bridging the Generational Divide. Irene and Emmett, thank you very much, as always, for being with us. Up next, Chef Lily Chan joins us to talk about how the notion of a table for two has mutated into a table for YouTube. How watching people eat on TV is the new dinner companion. That is next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.